You're listening to the Stronger Stride podcast
with your hosts, Lydia Mackay and Sophie Lane.
Welcome back to the Stronger Stride podcast. You're with your hosts, Sophie Lane and Lydia Mackay. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome.
Nice to have you once again.
Yes.
Feels like we haven't done this in a while, but we have been on our fortnightly rotation consistently. But I think, I don't know what's been going on. But that we've also got a very exciting guest once again. Surprise. Imagine if we go, oh, today we've got a really boring guest.
No, never.
Very good one. So we'll discuss everything about our guest soon. Mm. But Lydia, would you like to fill us in on your last fortnight?
I'd love to. But you know what? I was just thinking, can we also just say welcome to any of our new listeners? If there's anyone who's tuning in for the first time,
imagine that.
Yeah, how exciting.
I always think that because, well, I don't know, the early episodes are a bit rough.
Yeah, definitely.
Not saying we're great now, but like the audio wasn't ideal. So maybe just don't worry about the first two.
Mm. Yeah.
Start from like three or four and you'll be good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Let us know.
Leave us
a five-star review. That would be amazing.
Mm, maybe. But anyway, updates on the last 2 weeks. It's weird. I feel like I don't even know what's happened the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. I don't know what you've been up to. Even though I saw you in real life for the first time in a while, I feel like I don't know what you've been doing.
Yeah.
You've been everywhere.
Everywhere?
Yeah. You've been getting around.
Yeah, that's right.
Traveling.
Have I?
Road tripping.
That's it. I went down to visit the Sophie Lane.
Wow, lucky you.
Which was just absolutely fantastic.
I'm so jealous.
Just a little life update. I finished all my practical hours as a physio student, which is amazing and exciting. So
you know what that means? We can, once you like fully finish, we can update our little bio to say physiotherapist, not physiotherapy student.
Yeah,
and then we'll
very
be like
true.
Proper legit.
Yeah. You know? That's it. I know, it's exciting. But yeah, in between then, so I finished that, drove down to see Soph, and probably really the highlight of the 2 weeks was seeing Soph, of course. Oh, I mean, it's the highlight of the year, really.
Wow, big call.
It is. Yeah, it was. It was it was a fantastic weekend.
It was.
But the most exciting thing, well, Soph convinced me and convinced us that we should join in with the Terrigal Trotters Backyard Ultra. And if you don't know what a backyard ultra is, you can Google it, but I'll tell you as well.
I was going to say, don't leave them hanging.
It's 6.7 kilometers and you have to start it on the hour and you do it again every single hour. So on the hour, you do 6.7 Ks and then as the clock ticks over to the next hour, you do it again. And basically you keep going until you decide you can't go on any longer. So it's up to you whether you want to sprint it really quickly and have lots of rest or go really slowly and have not much rest or just sort of go somewhere in the middle and hang on and see what happens, which is kind of what we did. But yeah, the Terrigal Trotters organized a virtual one because the Central Coast is in lockdown. So Soph and I thought we'd do that for a bit of fun.
Even though we weren't in lockdown.
Yeah, even though we weren't in lockdown, we just ran laps for 8 hours around the swamp near Soph's
swamp. Yes, it was fun though. Thank you to Simone Harvey for organizing and for sitting around all day and all night to organize that and support everyone that was doing it. We lasted until around lunchtime, but there were people that went throughout the night, so that is crazy.
Oh, ridiculous. Yeah, it's wild. I'm just trying to pull up my Strava to see.
Are you still looking it up? Ooh, so Lydia ended up with 8 laps. Correct? And look, let's be honest, she could have kept going all day and all night, but I stopped at 7. And because she was at my house, she kind of felt a bit weird to keep going.
Oh, I wasn't going to keep going. How boring would that have been? You sitting inside, pouring with rain outside. It was like the most torrential weather. Windy. It was freezing cold. And Soph's inside, cozy. She's
I was having a great time.
She's eating her watermelon. One more lap was enough. I wasn't going to keep doing that.
That lap went quick. Yeah, that last lap was like quicker than all our other laps. I was not expecting you to be back so soon. I was just chilling on the floor because literally I laid on the floor when you left and you're like, are you still going to be there when I get back?
And she was.
And I was, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But yes, that was fun. Hey.
Yeah, it was good. It was lots of fun.
I'm glad to say like we've done a backyard ultra, you know?
Yeah, very true.
We don't need to do it again.
No.
I mean, I think I thought, oh, I know this is your week, but I'm going to interrupt because we were together. I expected it to be more comfortable. Like I, in my head, having the rest in between was like, oh, well, if you're resting, then like you're going to feel fresh. You're going to feel so good like for the next lap. But like, it's kind of just the same as if you were to keep going, like the fatigue in your legs, like it doesn't go away. Yes, you might not be breathless by the time you start again, but like your legs still hurt. You know what I mean? Mm. Like it's not really any different to the continuous, I feel. So yeah. I was surprised by that.
It's interesting you say that because I kind of felt the opposite, but I anticipated what you said, but I think I anticipated that to an extreme. Cause you know, that feeling, everyone would probably know that feeling when you're on like your big long run and you stop like at a set of traffic lights or you stop to like fix your top or retie your hair or something. And then you get started again and you're like, oh, this does not feel good. And you feel like you have to like re-warm up again. That's normally me. So I was thinking, oh, this ultra is going to be like that every single lap.
Yeah. You weren't keen.
No, yeah, I wasn't keen at all.
Well, actually, last episode we discussed it and you were like, no.
Yeah, I was still not sure if it was a joke or not. And then anyway, we did it. But weirdly, I actually enjoyed the rest. I was like, oh, who am I? Enjoying the rest, filling up my water bottle, staying hydrated. And
the time went fast too.
Yeah, but it was good. We did some gait and movement assessments with Soap because she's got a not too crash hot knee right now. But yeah, we use our time productively.
We're productive, yes. Yeah. Which is good.
That's good. All right. What about your week, Soap? I feel like that's as much as interesting my week. Oh, I did also run in Nelson Bay, ran at Mount Tomaree, which is, you know, good one to tick off.
Good. How was the elevation?
Oh, well, I mean, it's only 2Ks up, I think. So, like, it can never be that
quite steep, though, right?
It is very steep. Yeah.
Nice views at the top. Worth it.
Yes. Yeah. But no, that was lovely. And then I ran in Port Macquarie with my friend, which was lovely.
Nice.
Just been swimming, going to the gym, just doing all the usual stuff, really.
Nice.
But yeah, body's feeling good.
Good. Good to hear.
Yeah. Tell me so. Tell me about
my week is relatively similar to yours.
Good.
Did the Backyard Ultra, if you didn't know already. So I've already discussed that. So you get the idea. Basically, my knee really hurt from like the first lap. You know what this is turning into is just like you telling us your running week and how good it was and me describing my injuries and how I'm not running because it hurts. But I've had progress since then. So that day it really hurt. And then we went for a hike the day after.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
In Glenrock, which was lovely.
I did put that on Strava.
Yeah, we walked 7Ks. Really good content on Strava. Yeah. And it was like a bit sore, but like it felt good to walk. So that was good. And then I had Monday off. And then I did 20 minutes on Tuesday. Bit sore. Then I did Pure Run. I finally went back to Pure Run and did 8.6Ks. And like it was quick for me. Like it considering was. It was like 4:50 pace. So yeah, I was like, solid. This is a real test. And then I had 2 days off because the knee was quite sore. Then I did park run and it was good.
It's good.
And then I did 10Ks on Sunday and it hurt again. So it's all a bit random, but I just got back from a run. I know this is not the week we're talking about, but I just did 6Ks and it feels good, like a tiny bit tight in my hammy, but knee was fine. And also I was running along and I ran past this mum with like her son who maybe was like in kindy. And they're like, hi. And I was like, hi. And then the little boy just like started running and like just ran next to me and didn't say a word. And I was like, oh, like good running or something. Like, I didn't know what he wanted, like what was happening. And then he just kept smiling at me and just staring and smiling and just jogging next to me. So I just jogged, we just jogged together for like, I don't know, like 5 minutes or something. And I kept looking back at his mum thinking like, I hope she doesn't think I'm like stealing him. And he was just like giggling and laughing and smiling along and just like jogging next to me. And then we like went different directions and he was like, bye. And just waved. And then we departed ways. It was great. So you've been replaced officially.
Okay. Is this where it's going?
But yeah, my new training partner.
Gosh, I said my run with you was the highlight of the year and you just told me I'm being replaced
by a random child.
Okay.
It doesn't take much.
Wow. Gosh, I'm sorry. I was such bad company.
No, you're right.
Oh.
Well, I couldn't just repeat what you had talked about, so I tried to mix it up.
Fair.
So you got some competition, so just be careful.
Okay. So do you, so watch out.
Yeah, well, yeah. And then this weekend coming,
Oh,
exciting so news. Exciting. We are reunited so once again.
I know.
We could keep up this like 2-week rotation.
Oh, I know. Well, like, let's see. I'm going to book you in again soon.
All right.
Just you wait.
So the End Peak Trail Run in Coffs Harbour. Now, if any of our listeners are not from Greater Sydney, come and join us.
Mm-hmm. Come to Coffs Harbour.
Yep.
Yeah.
Free trail run. There's a 50K, 25K, a kids run, and like a 10K, something like that.
You can tell which episode Soph cares about.
The kids run. Yeah, I'm bringing up my little mate. We're going to do it together. Honestly, I think I would thrive at that distance at the moment rather than 50. Oh. I don't know how I'm going to, like, what if it feels like last week? Like, it's just going to hurt. I'm not sure.
I know.
We'll have fun.
I'll just take some
painkillers.
Well, potentially, but also we just don't think about it too much.
Yeah. It's easy for you to say.
Oh, one step at a time. That's
right. We'll get there. But yes, very exciting. So if you haven't already checked it out, you can listen to our episode with Keelan, or you can just search the End Peak Trail Run. There's a website or a Facebook event. So come and join us. We would love to see you all there.
Mm. But yeah, we did interview Keelan Birch, so definitely check out that episode.
Yes.
Okay. I think without further ado, we're going to give everyone a little bit of a rundown about our episode guest for today, yes, which is very, very exciting. So as always, it's always exciting.
We need a new word. All right. So today we have Patrick O'Connell, or otherwise known as Pat the Podiatrist on Instagram, who is an award-winning podiatrist from Victoria. He works between Geelong and the Surf Coast at his clinic called MovePod, which he's the founder of. And he kind of specializes in movement-based rehab and helps athletes to prevent running injuries and then rehab from their running injuries. And obviously there's a few misconceptions with podiatry, so we dive into those a little bit as well. Pat's focus is on movement and I guess gait analysis and improving mechanics and strength training as well. So we'll chat a little bit about that.
Yes, and his really sort of core belief is about keeping athletes moving and providing athletes with the skills and knowledge to prevent future injury. So not just getting people pain-free and able to continue running or whatever their sport is, but actually, you know, giving athletes those skills so that they can prevent injuries in the future. He doesn't just work with runners, but runners is his specialty. So he's got some fantastic tips for all of our listeners, as we're all runners, or at least have an interest in running. I'd hope so, at least by now. But yeah, we get to ask him all of those sort of big myth questions about heel striking, orthotics, pronation, overpronation, shoe stack height. We break down quite a few myths, which is really interesting because it's good to hear a podiatrist's perspective on some of those things a lot of people tend to give advice on that may not always be qualified to give that advice. And then, yeah, he tells us about how he assesses runners and the things that he looks for in movement patterns, like, you know, the biomechanics of how people run. We talk about force production, load absorption, tissue tolerance, and strength training, of course. It's our favorite thing to talk about. And Pat actually gives us some take-home tips too for strength work. So he's come up with a little 8-part series that takes us through some exercises for performance enhancement for runners and injury prevention. So that will go up on our Instagram as well after our podcast release. So that will be up there now, actually.
Yeah. So if you're not already following, it is at Stronger Stride on Instagram. So yeah, he'll go through a couple of videos on there, which will be really useful. So definitely check those out.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much all that we cover. Really interesting. There's definitely lots of take-homes and definitely lots of practical tips. So if you have an interest in improving your running performance and reducing your risk of injury, or if you have a niggling injury, maybe you might get some tips in this episode on how to sort of rehab that. In saying that though, of course, please do seek professional help if you do have something going on. But yeah, there's definitely lots you can take out from this episode.
Yes, enjoy, guys. And as always, leave a review on Apple. Follow us on Instagram at Stronger Stride and follow and subscribe wherever you listen.
That's it. Yeah. Tag us in your Instagram stories if you're listening and doing something interesting or fun, or if you're taking us on your run as well.
Yeah, we'd love to see.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Enjoy the show.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. Today we have a very exciting guest. We have actually another guest called Pat. So it's our second Pat for the season, which is nice. We had last Pat was really good. So no pressure. Current Pat.
Expectations high.
Yeah, that's right. So we've got Patrick O'Connell. He is a podiatrist and the founder of MovePod, which is a podiatry clinic in Geelong and the Surf Coast, I believe. So a little bit out of our area, but looks like a nice place to live. And he's, yeah, a running coach, sports podiatrist, and he's won a few awards as well. So the 2018 Australian Allied Health Award winner and 2019 National Industry Award judge. So we are very excited to have you on. Really keen to get your perspective on things. And, yeah, so welcome. How are you doing?
Yeah. Welcome, Pat. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
No worries. Did we get all that right? Anything we missed out?
Yeah, no, don't need any extras. Thanks.
That's good. That's enough titles. That's good. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into podiatry. Tell us a little bit about your running history. Let's just get to know you a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. So I fell into podiatry a little bit. I was in year 12 and deciding what I wanted to do with myself. And I knew I wanted to work in health, but I wasn't 100% sure exactly what part of health to work in. And at the time, I knew a couple of podiatrists, just family friends, and kind of liked what they did. And so I just threw that down as my number one option. And and kind of went down that path, and turned out to work quite well for me. And as I was in uni, I was kind of getting back into my running, and that kind of led down the whole path of wanting to do podiatry with running.
Nice.
Yeah, and I suppose I was a lot into my running earlier on. I loved running when I was younger and early days in high school, but then just kind of fell out of it a little bit as I went more into footy. As footy goes, a lot of injuries and surgeries, and eventually decided I probably wanted something a little bit less contact and something where I'm going to preserve my body a bit better. So, yeah, that's kind of how I went back into running around uni days, and that led me down more the path of, wanting to tie podiatry in with running.
Okay, awesome. So you were a runner, or like you just ran when you were quite young.
Yep.
Competitively, and then what completely transitioned to footy?
I always did a few sports, and I suppose I had a similar sort of little ass upbringing as like a lot of people who like running. And my mum's big into her running, so I did my first half marathon with her when I think I was 13 or 14.
Whoa. Wow. That's crazy. That's impressive.
Which I don't think she would condone anyway. She's an ass coach, so I don't think she would approve of that anymore.
Okay. yeah, controversial.
Yeah, at the time, I suppose you don't know any better. So, and then later years I kind of fell out of running a little bit more as footy took over. I think just when all your mates are playing footy, you tend to go down that path a little bit more. But fell back in love with it probably about 6 or 7 years ago, and well and truly back into it now.
Yeah, nice. Is that still sort of running that you do now, like the half marathon sort of distance, or what's your kind of favorite event, I guess?
I'm just when I was living in the city, so I've just moved from Melbourne down the coast about 18 months ago. And when I was living in the city, probably more like 10k half marathon sort of stuff. And then now that I'm down the coast, there's all the trails around, so I'm just training up for my first 100.
That's
exciting. Which one are you doing?
Surf Coast Century.
Oh, cool. Nice.
So yeah, that's in about 8 or 9 weeks.
Oh wow, not too far away.
Oh, that's
how's the training been going?
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really enjoying. Awesome. Loving. I just love going out there for hours on the trails. I think that's more up my alley than running around the concrete jungle.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Yeah, nice. That's exciting. Really good. Are we keen to see how you go with it? Have you got like a goal, or just kind of get it done and survive?
I think general goal would just generally like to get under 12 hours, but I'd love to just survive it and see how we go. I don't really know what to expect being the first one. I've You ever run 60k in one go?
Oh, okay. So, past halfway.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
It'll be
interesting.
We'll see what it's like.
Yeah, cool.
And have you got a support crew going with you?
Yeah, so my fiance, she usually follows me around. I think she'll be there carrying the food and drink around.
Oh, good. That's what you need.
Someone's got to do it. That's more important usually than the actual. You need that.
You've got the harder job.
Yeah. More stress probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really good. So I guess being our first podiatrist that we've had on, I know there's a bit of sort of some myths and misconceptions and stuff with podiatry. And I think traditionally it's come across to a lot of people as just if you've got ingrown toenails or if you're an older person with diabetes and like just foot care and things like that. But I think more so now there's a sort of emerging, I guess, stream of podiatry that is more suited to runners and biomechanics and that sort of side of things. Can you explain a little bit about what you do specifically, what sort of clients you see and how podiatry can actually be beneficial to runners, not just those other older people that we mentioned before?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's definitely the element of podiatry, or there's multiple different areas of podiatry, and one of those is those things that you talked about with the dirty stuff, the ingrown, and all the other sort of stuff that goes along with podiatry. But there's stuff as well like pediatrics, where there's a whole area around children and adolescents and all that sort of thing within podiatry. But then there is the sports side of podiatry, and I think a bigger part that's growing at the moment inside that sports side of podiatry is running mechanics. And I think the thing that sets us apart from other professions and certain people within different professions will have their little niches, but I suppose I see podiatrists in that space as lower limb specialists, so people who know the foot inside and out, every single joint, tendon, muscle, like this, it's such an intricate thing in the way that it moves. So I suppose just knowing that inside and out and being able to delve deeper into a few things that the foot, ankle and leg does for us while we're moving. It's an exciting thing because it's changing a lot at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. It's cool to be in that space where there's so much potential for it, and like running is such a big thing too. So I guess the growth of it, like it's only just getting started. So it'll be cool to see how that sort of evolves.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So when you talk about lower limb biomechanics, does that mean that as a podiatrist, you're looking at not just the foot, you do look up above just a little bit too?
Yeah. And I think being a running coach as well, like you are looking at the whole person and how they do. Like I think generally that needs to happen anyway, because there's so many things that can happen through the, like how the head's sitting or how they've got their neck or chin positioned as well, that will impact their overall running biomechanics. Still looking at the whole body and how that moves. And quite often, like I'm not changing that much around someone's running mechanics at the foot and ankle. We're usually changing what's happening more proximal anyway to try and impact further down the chain. Certainly looking further up as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's good to hear as well, because I think some people have that misconception too. They think, oh, well, like, what if it's connected to my knee or to my this or to my that? Like the podiatrist only knows the foot, but you obviously have to look above the foot to understand how the foot's working. So, yeah I mean, that's really good to know. And then the other sort of, like, what can people go and see you about? Like, how do people know if they should see or need to see a podiatrist?
Yeah, well, I suppose everyone's a little bit different in what they see and what they treat. I see a lot of knee injuries, so I see a lot of like ITB, patellofemoral joint stuff around the neck, runners. I see a lot of shin splints, calf injuries, Achilles, plantar fascia, stress fractures. Kind of any sort of lower limb injury that you can think of in running, we do treat it. And I suppose it's knowing what each person does, because there would be some podiatrists that don't see certain things within within that spectrum, and the same goes for, you know, you could go to an osteo or a physio that doesn't necessarily specialize in that area. So it's everyone has their own little niche that they like to work in, and hopefully if you go to someone that it's outside of that niche, they'll handball you to someone who knows a little bit better.
Okay, yeah, so I guess it sounds like there is a bit of overlap between different allied health as well, which probably for anyone who's getting injuries or whatever their concerns are, it sounds like it's important to actually not just pick an area of allied health, but actually a practitioner who specializes in what your sport is or like what your injury is. So
absolutely, and I think having a good network of health practitioners around you locally is super important if you're someone who's super active and someone you can trust. And usually people have someone within their network that will know someone or know of someone who knows someone. So you can usually find that sort of stuff out just by reaching out to your network of runners.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That's cool. Very interesting.
And I guess when you do get someone in, whether it is for an injury or they just, I guess, have a bit of a niggle or something that they're not sure about, do you sort of get them on the treadmill, have a look at their form? Is that kind of your first thing to look at? Or
if it's a specific injury, I'd usually do a little bit of an assessment in the room first. So, have a look at them in some static movements and then some like controlled dynamic movements, so things like single leg movements that are similar to your running, so even getting single leg squatting or single leg calf raising, seeing how they absorb load in a controlled environment, or how they produce force in a controlled environment, and then chuck them on the treadmill and see how they're moving as well. But it's if they're not able to control really specific movements to running in a controlled environment, then how are they going to then go and generate that force or control certain movements when it's more dynamic in their running?
So a biomechanics, the first thing that you'd look at, like, is that pretty much your go-to for just about any injury? Or I mean we're talking about runners, obviously. Is that where you normally start? Is that where you see most of the issues for runners?
I think a combination of how they move as well as their tissue capacity. So just as an example, like if you have someone with an Achilles overload, so some sort of chronic Achilles overload that's happened over a number of months, they're kilometers have gone up in the last 3 months just progressively, like they're doing all the right things around their load, but then you have them doing a calf endurance test and they can only calf raise 5 times. That's usually a pretty like clear sign that the tissue capacity isn't there, so they don't have that strength to tolerate what they're asking their body to do when they're running. So an element of it is how they're moving when they're running, but then also how is the strength of their muscles, and do they have that strength there to support the movement that they're asking their body to do?
So you're another advocate for strength training for runners, by the sounds of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And it comes in many shapes and forms. Like, it's, you know, strength training isn't always going to look the same for everyone, and we've got different schedules and different ways to fit it in. So, you know, for some people, a strength day might be skipping out a run and climbing multiple sets of stairs, just walking like really, really steep inclines, so that they're stressing that posterior chain, and then they're coming back down, so they're working different muscles on the way back down as well. So that can be a strength workout for someone on a certain day. They might not have gym equipment available to them, so they might be at home doing body weight strength, or they might have the full access of gym and be able to load up heavy. So I think it's important, but it's also important to be flexible and work within, you know, your own parameters and what you've got available to you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's good. And then I guess when we're talking about biomechanics, we'll bring it back to there for a little while. What do you look at? So obviously we've realized you're not just looking at the foot. So are there certain cues or things that you're looking out for with people's forms? I know everyone's we've kind of moved on from heel strike being the main thing, but are there certain factors like trunk position or pronation, all those sort of things? Are there things that you sort of tick off as you're looking through the body to see any sort of factors that might be contributing?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that goes back to what we're saying about that control thing. And people will tend to adopt different movement pathways depending on the range of motion that they have available in a joint or the strength that they have available in certain movements. So there's a lot of variation person to person. And I try not to get too bogged down in like the nitty gritty of tiny little things, but more looking at larger parts of the movement. So like, how well are they absorbing load? So are they sinking really deep into knee flexion when their foot's in contact with the ground?
Mm-hmm.
So if that's happening, then they're spending a lot of time in stance phase. Or have they got a really stiff limb, and are they staying really straight through the knee even when their foot's contacting the ground? So that and people will change depending on the speeds that you get them running at as well. So that's an element of it too. So there's definitely things I look at. But yeah, I try to keep it big picture as much as possible, and not get too bogged down on like what's the degree of this angle of course, of the knee, or how many degrees has your rear foot
profile,
like different things like that. And I think, you know, there's an element that there's no bad movements. It's just like, how well can we control them? And are they sustainable movements? It's more big picture, I suppose, for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very interesting. It sounds like your approach is about, well, as you've said, ability for their body to tolerate their load. So like tissue capacity, as opposed to performance. So I guess obviously being a health professional, it's about treating injuries. It's not, well, I mean, maybe you do performance. So obviously you're a run coach, so you've got that avenue as well. But when we're just talking about injury prevention, it sounds like the keys sort of things that you're looking out for is, being able to tolerate the load that you're putting through your legs, which is really interesting. What about, like, this is something we've just got to ask. What's the deal with heel strike? Is it good? Is it bad? You hear it all the time, people talking about needing to transition into a midfoot or forefoot. Should we all be doing that?
I've got no issue with any type of foot strike. To me, it doesn't matter if you're on your heel, on your midfoot, on your forefoot. When I'm looking at that sort of stuff, I'm more looking at where you're landing in relation to your front knee and your center of mass. So like if you're, I want to see someone creating negative foot speed. So that means their foot coming back underneath them before it hits the ground. So you're moving forward and then you pull it back underneath yourself just before it hits the ground.
Yeah.
So creating that negative foot speed and then the foot hitting underneath a bent knee, and like towards your center of mass, but kind of just in front of it. So if you've got those things happening, it doesn't really matter what part of the foot you're landing on. But in saying that, we can deload certain injuries by placing someone intentionally onto a different part of their foot. So as an example, like if someone's got a calf strain and they want to keep hobbling along with their running, they can shift from a forefoot strike to a bit more of a heel strike, and they'll get slightly less calf load, or shin soreness if they're getting soreness through the front of their shin, so the muscles that decelerate the foot, then you could shift them slightly more into a forefoot strike to deload those muscles. So I rarely do that, but that's something you can do to shift load from one muscle to another.
Yeah. Oh, it's very interesting. But predominantly you're wanting people to be thinking about the overall stacking of their body position as opposed to is it heel or is it midfoot? But is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's interesting though that you have got the option, or you do have that avenue as intervention potentially to offload or increase load in different structures. Do you do that with shoes as well? Do you ever prescribe shoes for people, like shoes with a bigger heel to toe drop in order to offload certain tissue? Is that something that
I wouldn't do it that often. Usually when I'm looking at loading tissue, I'm more looking at increasing the load tolerance of a tissue, so strengthening it up as opposed to like trying to get too many quick wins. Probably the one exception to that would be like certain forefoot injuries. If someone's wanting to keep loading, chucking them in something with like a little bit more stack height under the forefoot is a really easy way to deload some forefoot injuries.
Okay, nice.
But it's, again, it's rare.
Yeah. And it's a quick win, as you said. It's not it's not a long-term strategy, which is, I think everyone needs that reminder at times that we can't fix our injuries with a certain shoe or a bit of K-tape. Doesn't quite cut it, does it?
And where do orthotics come into all of this? So that's probably another misconception that you go to a podiatrist, they charge you $800 for a pair of orthotics and say, see you next year. Do you prescribe orthotics? When do you think they're appropriate? Obviously, it's an individual basis, of course, but are there certain situations that it would be beneficial rather than just assuming everyone needs them or
Is that falling into the shoe category of quick wins?
Well, that's exactly what I was just about to touch on when we were talking about that. It's exactly that. So you're kind of using it, if you're utilizing it, you want to use it as a short-term option whilst you're working on long-term prevention or long-term management.
Nice.
So it shouldn't, there's hardly any situations where it should be a, here's your orthotic, come back every 2 years and have it for the rest of your life.
It really
should be something where it's, you know, here's, let's use this in the short term to try and deload certain tissue so that you're moving. But let's remember that we're working on your strength so that you don't need this in the future. So
you
want to have that exit plan out of an orthotic if you're using an orthotic. And yeah, very, 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 very rarely would you ever need something. It would have to be something structural or something where you need it kind of long term.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Lydia and I both used to work in a running shop for years, and so many times they'd come in and they'd have these orthotics that just looked like ancient, like 20 years old, falling apart. And like, oh, I've got to put these in. I'm like, when did you get them? They're like, oh, like 8 years ago. And you're like, but have you been back to make sure they're still right for you? Like, surely things have changed. Is it even going to work with the new shoe? Like, so many factors, but it's almost like this safety blanket of if I don't wear these, everything's going to fall apart, and they just rely on it, which I guess even if it's a placebo thing and it helps them, maybe that's something. But I feel like a lot of people do just rely on them and then don't put in the work to get out of them.
Well, that's it. I think that's kind of a really important question is, do you remember why you're in these, and and what are you doing to try and set yourself up for the future to be out of these? So it's having those two things of like, do you actually, like, why are you actually in them in the first place? And how can we get you out of them? Because at the end of the day, you want to be strong, you want to function as naturally as possible. I think that's kind of being self-reliant on your body as opposed to on an external device is pretty good.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I can, I mean, I'm guilty of the orthotic situation too, which I guess probably many people. Yeah. In fact, I'd love to know what the statistics are, but I mean, I wore the same pair of orthotics for, I think, 10 or 11 years, literally the same pair. Like, I didn't even get them updated, but I just carried them around because I was like, well, I'm not going to get rid of them. Like, I might as well. So every time I'd go to the shoe shop, I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to put my orthotics in. And then I don't know if it was you, so if it was like, do you still need them? Was it you?
And you had them with your Kayanos, didn't you too? Like, just a typical case.
Yeah. That's it.
I'm glad we've moved on since then. Now you're in like Vibram minimal toe shoes. What's happened?
I have them. I haven't run a journey yet, but it's in process. In fact, we would love to ask you, Pat, like going from the other extreme. So you've obviously got, there's patients or runners who used to wearing in really stiff structured shoes. I know we're sort of like starting to delve into shoes, but I know you said something just before about running as natural as possible. Is barefoot running an option, or is that a valuable training tool or strengthening tool? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think me personally, I'd use it as a training tool. It's if you're wanting to be just a full-time barefoot runner, that's a personal option, and you can make that choice if you want to. I think if you're going to, it takes a lot of hard work to get yourself there and a lot of conditioning and increasing your tissue tolerance over a period of time so that you can do it without any injuries. I think there was a big, you know, when there was that big movement of barefoot runners 10, 15 years ago, and there was a massive wave of it, and it wound up in a lot of injuries just because there are a lot of people doing it without that long-term building of tissue tolerance. So yeah, it's certainly it's something that people can do if they want to do that full time, but it just requires a bit of that work in the background to get yourself to that point, and making sure that you're really strong and stable through the feet just by using your muscles, and then also making sure that the rest of your body is functioning really well, and you're absorbing load well, and you're producing force really well through your foot and your lower limb. So yes, people can go that way full time, but me personally, I just use it as a training tool. So I get people to kick off their shoes, not so much in winter, but in summer, kicking off their shoes at the end of a session and just doing some run throughs barefoot.
Nice.
Handy way just to top off a session, and then doing some barefoot training on their own outside of their running. So just some barefoot exercises and that sort of stuff that they can chip away at home.
Yeah. Oh, it's very interesting because, I mean, it is almost quite confusing when you sort of look at the extremes of running shoes. Like Hoka has like grown massively in the last 5 years, and it seems to be, I mean, probably in the bush, it's either Salomon or Hoka just about. So they're a very popular shoe, but they're super chunky. Like I'm sure all our listeners are familiar with Hoka shoes. If not, just Google Hoka Bondi, and they're like big moon boots. And I mean, I think they feel great, but then there's other people going down that barefoot world, and it kind of almost makes you think, well, like, what is the point of shoes? Like if people can get away with running with almost no shoes, and then people are also doing really well with shoes, like is it just up to each individual, or is there something that we're missing? Like
I think it's up to each individual. And I think, like, I always say to like try and get people running in the least amount of shoe that they can.
Okay.
If you're really strong and you can tolerate a lower profile shoe, then absolutely do it. Like, what's the point in carrying more weight around if you don't need to? So, but then at the same time, a lot of those shoes that you're talking about have gone really lightweight at the same
time. It's true, yeah.
Having that high profile. So, yeah, I think it's just finding what works for you and doing the training outside of the shoe to make sure that you're efficient regardless. Even whether you're in the shoe or not in the shoe, if you've done the training outside of it, you're going to be moving well. So I think, yeah, doing a bit of both is, I think variety is super important, and variety of movement is huge for runners.
It sounds like the common theme is strength, isn't it? We keep coming back to this with like with all of our guests, within our chat so far, everything that you've said, it comes back to having strong feet.
Yeah, absolutely.
How would you look at that? So obviously you just said running barefoot at the end of your session, things like that will be good to strengthen your feet. But even forgetting the whole barefoot thing, I guess foot strength is important, having a strong arch and mobility through your feet as well. Would you suggest that people just that are wearing normal shoes, regardless of what shoe they're wearing, do some specific foot strengthening exercises on top of their sort of as their strength work as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've all been wearing shoes a long time, and it definitely changes the shape of our feet, and it changes how the muscles function around the toes and through the arch. So if you're in those shoes day to day, like kicking off those shoes at the end of the day and going through a bit of like a foot mobility series or a few different foot exercises is really important. And just getting, just ensuring that all the muscles around the toes and the feet are functioning really well every single day can be beneficial. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be like applying heavy load to strengthening exercises every day. It can just be, I'm not sure if you've seen like the different toe exercises where you like
spread. Like the toga, toe yoga.
Yeah, like all that sort of stuff. So even that sort of stuff at the end of the day, just to keep it moving.
Just a bit of movement.
But
could you just like run us through what, because I don't know what.
I feel like you need visuals for it, but it's basically just like moving your toes, isn't it, really? Like have your feet on the floor, lift your big toe up, lift your other toes up.
If you want to put a video up for like listeners.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
I can shoot something through.
That'd be awesome. Or even if we can just refer our listeners to a post. I know you've got some really useful posts on your Instagram page with there's a whole bunch of stuff, but maybe you've
your
got
Instagram's
someone.
Very good. It's really like some of your posts, like just they look good, but they're also just like very useful. Like it's a good resource, I reckon. So good job. I don't know who does your marketing and stuff, but. Whoever's doing that looks good. It's probably just you, isn't it? Well done.
Not that big. I'm not paying someone to.
That's good. Did you want to touch on a little bit about MovePod and I guess how that started? And I know we've kind of talked about what you do personally, but how the whole business runs and I guess the goals behind it all.
Yeah. So I was working for a kind of large. Musk clinic in Melbourne, so just a lot of sports injuries and that sort of thing in Melbourne. Was a team of about 15 to 20, mix of like physios, EPs, podiatry, and massage. So yeah, big team there, and I was working there for a few years, and I was doing like a bit of this sort of stuff within that clinic. And I just kind of, we were going to move down the coast anyway. So we're looking for a bit of a change of scenery, a bit of a more relaxing lifestyle than the city. Just kind of as I branched off into MovePod as we moved down, I just went even more down that sort of running biomechanics path and all the stuff that kind of lights me up and makes my days enjoyable. So, that's kind of how MovePod started, and partnered up with some cool clinics down here, which share a fairly similar philosophy around strength and movement-based rehab, and the importance of us kind of moving naturally and moving efficiently, and so that's kind of how it all started, and absolutely loving it.
That's fantastic. And so do you only treat runners or?
No. Yeah, definitely see a whole lot of other people. It's, it can be an injury that you picked up at work. You might be walking a bit more than you usually would. I just purely from a lot of the stuff that I do online and doing a lot of running coaching, that sort of stuff, you do just tend to pick up a lot of runners. Certainly not complaining about it.
That's the dream, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
That's a good mix. You kind of have a mix of, your everyday people picking up injuries in their lives, and then also a good chunk of runners who are really passionate about their running.
What's the most common running injury that you see?
I reckon Achilles.
Yes. Yeah. So it's been there.
I'm still there. I don't think I've ever not been there. I feel like it's just part of life now. I don't know if it's ever going to go. Maybe I'll come and see you next time down in Victoria. I don't know. I mean, any tips? Like, obviously, I feel like I've been told what to do and I feel like I've done it. But it just every time I increase the load a little bit, it just comes back. But what would be your tips for
definitely getting the load right is a big one, and that right combination of your slow, cruisy aerobic runs combined with like a little bit of speed work. I think everyone tends to go a little bit too overs on their speed work, or they run their slow runs a little bit too quick, which your Achilles is, you know, it's a spring. So whenever you're running in those, whenever you're running a little bit faster, it's working quite a lot. So getting that load right, and then I think just making sure that whole chain is really strong and efficient and good at absorbing load, but also propulsion, so that it's not all on the Achilles and you have everything else surrounding it functioning really efficiently. I find that's always the go-to, making sure that your shock absorbers are working well through the leg and the springs are working really well everywhere else. Mm-hmm. So it's not all on the Achilles.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good point, because often, yeah, you'll get an injury like that, or whether it's knee pain or whatever it is, and just think, okay, I just need to fix this small area. But yeah, of course, it must be coming from, like, especially when it's been going on for so long, there must be more to it or something else that's contributing to it. So I think that's great that you kind of, yeah, cover all bases and look sort of head to toe.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's cool.
You kind of, if you're not, you're probably missing a few key points. So
yeah for sure, there must be a reason.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just a coincidence.
Yeah, that's right. have you had many injuries yourself?
I certainly playing footy I had a lot. Mm-hmm. I did a bad one when I was doing athletics in year 12 as well. I did an avulsion fracture of my pelvis, so hamstring took a chunk of my pelvis.
Oh, that's not nice.
So that's kind of when that's actually kind of when running stopped for me. So
yeah, well, that's a good excuse.
And then played a bit more footy after that, but then I broke both my collarbones, so got surgery on those, and
then
that was the end of footy. So
after running, try again.
and then back to running. Yeah, I've had a few. Yeah, nothing major, nothing huge, just like niggly stuff, like a little bit of Achilles, the old hamstring injury niggles sometimes. I've had a little bit of ITB a couple of years ago, but nothing crazy.
Yeah, cool. So I guess it'd be nice for our listeners to have a bit of like some practical takeaways, I guess, that they could implement. Obviously, in an ideal world, we'd all come and see you, but majority of our listeners are from New South Wales, I think. Yeah. So in terms of, you were talking before about sort of having the foot land underneath the body and things like that, are there cues that people can, when they're just jogging along, try and implement to make some subtle changes? Obviously, we're not going to change anything too dramatic, because obviously that's going to put you at risk of something else, but are there little things that majority of people should consider when they're running?
Yeah, I think in terms of general cues, I think some nice and easy ones to talk about and think about are ones that we just can generally adapt our whole movement around. So like just things like running tall and, you know, pretending like you've got a piece of string coming out the top of your head and someone's pulling you up on that piece of string. So kind of like extending you up through your neck a little bit, because that can really improve just how you're holding yourself whilst you're running. Things like running proud but relaxed. So, you know, when people, you can get them to have their chest out a little bit, but still being relaxed through the shoulders and the arms. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've probably heard that one where your relaxed hands, you're pretending like you're holding two chips between fingers, just so you're not kind of crushing the chips. So really.
Yeah, that's because a lot of people are really tense, like they hold a fist or something. Yeah.
Or even the one where you pretend like you're holding two little birds in your hands. Crush them. Those are some good ones where you're practicing having really soft and relaxed hands, which can help you to relax through the upper body.
Yeah, interesting.
Other than that, I think noise that we generate around our footsteps is a really good cue that we can all kind of focus on a little bit. So trying to run quietly. If we're making a lot of noise with each step, then we're using a lot of energy with each step. So if we can run really quietly and try and keep each step as quiet as possible, then we're making each footstep a little bit more efficient. So
yeah, cool.
I think they're just some nice general ones that don't require any sort of like visual representation that you can literally just think of whilst you're out on a run.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's really useful. I'm going to try that myself. And any sort of, obviously, again, there's so many factors to it, but have you got sort of one or two, I guess, strength exercises that you think people should try if they haven't already?
Yeah, I'm a crazy big advocate of calf raises.
Yeah, cool. Seated or standing or
like both? Bent knee? So standing and bent knee. Bent knee, obviously being soleus. I'm not sure if you've had guests on talk about your soleus before, but it produces and takes a hell of a lot of force when we're running. So somewhere up around like 7 to 8 times our body weight in force. So mm-hmm. it needs to be ridiculously strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the gastroc, which is the standing straight leg calf raise. Not as much force with running, but still super important. So, and mm-hmm. I see a lot of strains in those two muscle groups in runners, so two muscles that are really important to be strong
Okay. And if people are just at home, is just sort of standing with like no weight, is that enough? Is it
if it's all they've got available to them,
yeah, of course, that's
it. Like if you can load it up, then load it up. Everyone's going to be a little bit different. If you haven't had much strength training history, then sitting somewhere around 3 sets of 10 to 12 is fine. If you've done a bit of strength training, then you can load it up with some heavier stuff and do 4 sets of 8. Or if you want to go really heavy, then you could go really up the weight and go 5 sets of 5. Just kind of depends on your training history
and how
comfortable you are with those movements. Like everyone can test their own calf strength at home. And like if you stand on one leg and try and do as many calf raises as possible, you can see where you're at from a calf strength point of view.
Yeah, cool. Is there a target that you think people should be hitting with that?
Yeah, it varies on age, but like roughly 25 to 35. Younger people in their 20s should be trying to go for like the 35 sort of range. Older age groups more in that sort of 25 to 30 range. So it depends on your age a little bit, but you'd be surprised how many runners who do a lot of running can't do that. So
yeah, which you wouldn't expect, hey, because like running the whole time you're running, you're only ever on one leg, so you'd think to be able to get through a decent run, yeah, you should be able to. I think Lydia's laughing because I always say that.
Like, well, but it's a lot of reps. 30 reps is a lot of reps.
And,
I mean, I've been pretty good with calf strength work maybe like the last 8 to 10 months. But gosh, when I started, it was embarrassing. I felt embarrassed how weak I was. I was like, gosh, like I'd be doing them in the gym, like on my leg day, just like single leg calf raises. And I was like, oh my gosh, my calves are burning. And I've gotten better, but gee, 30 reps, it is a lot.
It is. Yeah, it is. And it takes a bit of work to get that, get your benchmark up there. So, it's definitely one of the big ones that you can work on at home. And it's just such an easy and accessible exercise. Like, I think that's why I like it to be a good focus point for people as well, because it's such an easy exercise to be able to do at home.
Do you see plyometrics as a valuable strengthening tool, or do you sort of categorize that as like a separate, like, pre-return to run exercise, or like do you prescribe that very often?
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably like it depends on what phase of their strength training we're in.
So
at certain stages of their like running calendar, if you were to look at someone's year and periodize it across the year, and when are they racing certain races, when are they working on speed, when are they working on endurance, that sort of stuff, you would work their strength training around that. So certain times of the year, you're going to have them doing more like slow, eccentric, really sort of sets. And then other times of the year, you're going to get them working on plyometrics, power, speed, all that sort of stuff all at once. So you're just working on different attributes at different times of the year. So I would prescribe it within a strength training program
yeah
if yeah at certain stages of their year
Yeah, interesting. So it's not like a staple all year round.
I think a little bit of it here and there, and like even doing your run throughs barefoot, you're getting like a little bit of plyometric training just from doing.
Of course.
So yeah, you can get a whole lot of different ways. It doesn't have to be, you know, high pogo hops or box jumps or stuff like that. It can be popping your shoes off and doing a couple of run throughs, and you've got a bit of plyo in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice. So, yeah, what is the deal with pronation? Because my whole life I thought there was something wrong with my feet and I overpronated, hence the orthotics and hence the stability the shoes. But, yeah, that's it for 12 years or more. Is it a myth?
Yeah, I think it's probably received a little bit too much negative press for a long time. It's your natural shock absorber. So it's not something that we want to go and put a concrete block under and prevent. It's something that we want to promote, but promote it, you being able to control that really well with your body. So if you're really strong and stable in a lot of movements, if you're really good at your shock absorption and propulsion phases of your running, then you'll control your pronation really well, and it will benefit you in the way that it absorbs load for you. So I think it's just been demonized for a long period of time, and the running shoe industry just jumped on the bandwagon of it and made a whole genre around it and convinced people that they needed a lot of, you know, correction underneath their feet for them to be able to function efficiently. But yeah, it's changing a bit, and there's, I'm sure you'd see on the shelves at shoe stores, there's less and less what they call pronation control or that sort of thing. So yeah, it's changing a little bit, and I think people are realizing that we do want this shock absorbing phase of our running cycle. So yeah, it's not something to be avoided or demonized. We want a little bit of it.
Yeah. What about the whole, like, again, at the shoe shop, everyone, regardless whether they're pronating or not, would always say, I need arch support. So not even just like a medial post in your shoe that's just firmer to stop your pronating, but actually just having something under your arch, even if you're not a flat-footed person. Yeah. Is there any use to having that there, or is it just one of those myths again along with pronation?
Yeah, I think that kind of plays into what we're chatting about with the orthotics.
Yeah.
It's
kind of just a band-aid.
Yeah. And going back to those questions that we asked, like why do you need it? And if you do need it for that reason, then what are we doing to prevent you needing it in the future? So use it as a short-term thing if you need it, but certainly put some things in place so that you just don't need this external support down the track, and you can actually function freely just from your own muscles.
So it's more about having a strong foot that can control its range of motion. That's awesome. I mean, comes back to strength at the end of the day, doesn't it?
It does.
There you go. We've come full circle. Look at that.
Yeah. And movement pathways, and you know, the strength and how our muscles control us through certain movements. It's partially just the muscles, and then you've also got the nervous system and how it takes us through different movement pathways.
That was very, very interesting. I think you would have definitely busted some myths for probably a lot of our listeners in regards to orthotics, about, you know, what we just spoke about, the medial posting, anti-pronation shoes, and just a specific shoe being the best shoe, or a specific foot type being the best way it moves. It's good to debunk those, because there's a lot of things that I know I believe for a really long time, but it's great to have someone like yourself share that message, and the fact that you're working with lots of runners as well, so you're getting that message out there to the people who need it. It's really good.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Hopefully everyone took some value out of that. We got some really nice takeaways there. If you do have any more questions, please let us know. Or if you want to reach out to Pat personally, you can reach him on Instagram. It's pat.the.podiatrist. Correct. Or at MovePod for his business stuff. He's got, as I said, really good Instagram. So if you're an Instagram fan, have a bit of a scroll through. And before you ask a question, there's probably an answer on his page somewhere. Yeah. So just scroll through. There's heaps of different stuff about specific exercises or specific injuries, things like that. So have a bit of a scroll through, check all that out. And if they want to work with you, if they're local, do they just give MovePod a call?
Yeah, you can just there's online booking on the website. There's links on both the Instagram pages. Cool. Or if they just want to shoot through a question beforehand, they can shoot a message through to either of those pages.
Perfect. Cool. All right.
Thank you so much, Pat. We've absolutely loved having you on. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.